It's the Mike Tech Show, show number 385. This show is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com. Everybody, welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Mike Smith. Thank you very much for downloading and subscribing to the show. Please visit the main website at miketechshow.com. You can email me suggestions for future show topics or any question. My email address is miketechshow@gmail.com. You can leave me a voicemail message on Skype. My Skype name's Mike Tech Show, one word. The phone number is 240-949-2450. Follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/MikeTechShow, and Facebook, facebook.com/MikeTechShow. By following me, you will be alerted to when I'm live, what the schedule is for recording, and when the content is posted. I always will tweet and Facebook that. I have lots to cover tonight. This is one of those shows that a lot of you really, really like. The checklist that will be provided in PDF form for you to download. And that is going to be on doing a new Windows 7 setup, the workflow. And then also Outlook, transferring Outlook data. What's the best process? This is very nice for you to, if you're in the business or even if you're tackling this yourself. Hey, you got a new Windows 7 system. You don't have to use every item that we talk about, but this is going to be a great guideline for you. Maybe there's things that you forgot or, you know, it's nice to have a checklist. You get the warm, fuzzy feeling when you begin doing this work. So before we get started, it's holiday season and this time of year, bad weather. And boy, is it cold right now. It's starting to get really cold. Dropped like 35 degrees in 24 hours here in the Philadelphia area. And getting everyone together in one room is almost impossible. And that's why the service GoToMeeting is the best service for you to pull everybody together. It supports any platform that someone wants to use to join your meeting. It doesn't matter whether it's Android, whether it's an iPad, computer, whether it's Mac or PC. It's easy to schedule a meeting, and you can have unlimited meetings anytime for one flat rate. Whether you're traveling or snowed in, it doesn't matter. You're going to be able to hold these online meetings. I love the service, and you can try it free for 30 days, but you got to visit gotomeeting.com and then click on the try it free button and then enter the promo code podcast. So go to meeting.com, click on the try it free, enter podcast, and you'll be playing with it for 30 days. So first up is the Windows 7 setup. You get a new Windows 7 system, and it doesn't matter whether it's home premium, professional, ultimate, whether this is for a client, a friend, family, work. This is going to be a great guide for you to look at and see maybe something that you've missed or something you haven't thought of. We're going to make you think about it. And this was generously provided to me by Kate, who's a consultant in Canada and always contributes greatly to the show. I really appreciate it. And I'm going to add my 2 cents. And then together, we're going to have this great PDF for you. So let's begin. What's in the box? Remove the box. Check the setup guide quick to be sure all parts are there. Now, I always look at the packing list because 90% of the time I'm dealing with Dell. And I'll look at the packing list and they are very good with an itemized list of what should be in that system. Every single part number, every detail. And it's how I can compare to the system that most likely I ordered for them. And then I can take a look at, did they deliver what I ordered? Because sometimes that doesn't happen. So we look at the packing list, and then we open up and certainly start doing an inventory. Let's make sure everything's there. If the customer plans to connect via wireless, you know, this might be a laptop, is there actually a router? I love that. Does the customer have the router login and password? Does the customer know the Wi-Fi passphrase? Well, for me, many times I'm resetting the router because they don't know that password. It was set up a long time ago by one of their kids or something or who knows what. But these are great checklist items. Assemble, boot up, go through the registration process, and then inventory using Speccy. Now me, I will inventory it using SIW, the technician's license. Next section, update, uninstall, and install. Windows updates, then reboot. Now here's where I disagree. I don't hit the Windows update just then. I save that up until the end. I mean, it doesn't matter when you do it, but Kate likes to do it up front. Check system restore. That's new because check for the system restore, we've been seeing from Dell, new Dell and HP systems, why is it disabled? That's insane. This is an important part of the operating system. So you need to check that system restore is not deactivated. PC decrapifier, a piece of software that will go in and let you check all the crap to be uninstalled. I don't have that on Dell Optiplexes, which is what I buy the most for my clients. Now remember, my clients are all businesses mostly. I order an Optiplex with no junk. There's no antivirus software. There's no Office Trial Edition. There's no crap. When you buy an Optiplex, it's a business grade system. That's a step that I've been very fortunate that I'm not faced with all the time. Install, configure. Now she has Microsoft Security Essentials. Me, it's Avira. If it's not an Office system, the Office systems, it's going to be the antivirus that company supports and uses. Unfortunately, most of the time, that's Symantec. The next step is that critical, and I've used this every single day this week, Nine Night, NINITE.com. It is a required site where you can easily check all the programs that you want and have them download, and it's so easy, so fast, and you don't have the fuss and muss of going to each website. Even just from what you save on Adobe, when you go to load, I mean, this is standard for me on every system. You got Adobe Flash, then you got Adobe Acrobat Reader, Adobe Air, Adobe Shockwave. It's a pain. How would you like to just check all them and just let it install? And you're not faced with any prompts. And something I've been doing lately to save time, why that's downloading and installing, you can go do something else on the system. Windows Live Essentials or alternatives? Well, not with my clients. I'm not a Windows Live Essential plan, but again, you should look at this. Set up ISP-based email. Test, send, and receive. Set leave on server info. Now, for me, there's always an email migration going on. 99.9% of my clients use Outlook, and I am always faced with an Outlook migration, data migration. So, as a separate checklist, when I'm finished this, I will review my Office checklist, and on Ustream, you will get to see exactly what I'm talking about because I'm going to go through it step by step, and I'm going to show you the screens. Install Microsoft Office and accept the agreement, the EULA, activate, and then open each program. Absolutely. When you open Office, you're going to be asked, how do you want to search for help? Do you want to search online or do you want to search? I always uncheck that not to go online. And then it's going to ask you, do you want Microsoft updates? Now, that's different than Windows updates. So the first time you run an Office program, you got to answer that question for the Microsoft updates. I always take that. So the Microsoft update is far better than the Windows one because it will look at all the Microsoft software that's on your system and give you options for updating those programs. Auto runs. This is where Kate will look at auto runs. On a new system, I don't care about that yet, but that's still something good. Reboot, install more updates if there are, and of course there's always more updates because there's updates that depend on other updates. Clean temp files. I'm not there yet. I'm just not feeling it. I mean, this is a new system. How bad should the temp files be? I'm going to do that at the end, but we have clean temp files. See cleaner, then reboot. Again, I'm not into CCleaner on the new system this early in the process, but that is, again, a great recommendation. Kate just stopped me in the chat and said, Mike, have you set up a new HP lately? She's absolutely right. I'm taking for granted that you have bought and controlled the install of what you're buying and that I have been very, very fortunate to be buying a lot of Dell Optiplexes where I control the install and everything that's going to be on that system, so there's not a lot of junk. But anytime you're cleaning up and you're going to clean up the temp files, you absolutely should run CCleaner to finish that off because so many programs do not uninstall properly and leave a lot of junk behind that can interfere. Now, preparing to transfer files, you have to identify everything that needs to be transferred. How many user accounts? Do they all need to be transferred? Anyone using iTunes? Oh, what a mess. That iTunes has always been tough on migrating because people have 10, 20, 30 gigs of music that needs to be copied. That always takes a lot of time. Now, when I'm doing this, I'm paid by the hour. And I let them know up front, if I see 20, 30 gigs of music files, I let them know this is adding a couple extra hours to the entire process here. And as long as they understand, you know, they got all that music and it's got to be transferred. Any accounting programs, this is very important, or tax programs, simply accounting custom templates are not where you expect them to be. That's absolutely correct. Some versions of TurboTax store files in this root of C. That is absolutely correct. I also deal with financial advisors where the main office stores stuff in directories that they should not be doing by any logic. So you got to watch for that. If going to a newer version of Simply or Quicken, you have to do a special export or save the procedure on the old machine, or go through a save procedure. What I'll do is I have them do the backup that the program supports, because then it also supports a restore. So certainly if it's a QuickBooks, you know, I'm grabbing the raw data files, but then I also, as a double backup, go through the backup process that the program provides. They always have that on any accounting program. There's going to be some way for them to back up. What about the crap on the desktop? I always grab the desktop folder, but when I'm restoring it, I convince my client to not let me restore all that back to the desktop, because 9 times out of 10, my users are using the desktop as their file cabinet and putting lots of folders. And I say, this is not where you want to put them. So I create an old desktop folder and I stick it in the My Documents area, and then I will create a favorite in the Windows 7 File Explorer as a link to the old desktop directory. And now they have access to the old desktop and it's teaching them to keep it in folders, keep it under My Documents, and keep it organized. So we're doing a bunch of things by cleaning up the desktop, moving the client to a better method and procedure for the saving of files. I did that this week, every day. Commonly overlooked things that you will regret not having copied, especially if you are only working with one monitor. Favorites, Cookies, email. Favorites and Cookies, there's two programs. I've talked about them in the past, and that is Backrex for Internet Explorer, Moz Backup for the Firefox. I need a program for Chrome. I've run into a problem yesterday where I took the default profile directory, copied it over. It works, but every time we click on the icon, we get an error saying it's not the newest version of Chrome for this profile. Well, yes, it is. So it's an incorrect error. I need a program or a method, because I'm not a Chrome person. A method or procedure, a program, a utility that lets you back up the Chrome profile and restore it. That's something I need. Photos that are someplace unexpected. Photos could be anywhere, depending on the program and the software that someone's using. License keys for accounting programs. That is very important. And that's where I use my SIW, and that grabs all the keys. Determine the best transfer method. How much stuff? How complicated? Is there already a backup? Does the customer know all the email passwords? Oh, today, that's exactly what I ran into. I said, do you know this email password? As I was on his old system in safe mode because the system had crashed with a blue screen of death, and it was Vista. And instead of doing the system restore, and it's an HP system, and I didn't want to go back to factory defaults. Well, I just happened to, in my bag, have a fresh brand new Windows 7 Professional with a key that I could sell. So I talked to the client, and rightfully so, moving forward, since the system was able to handle Windows 7 with no trouble, 4 gig in memory, and it was fairly new, but he just bought it like before Windows 7 came out, and was sort of like at the end of Vista, and he was stuck with Vista. Now he's got nice Windows 7 Professional, and that install just went beautifully, and I didn't have to worry about one driver. Everything from the install worked with me not even having to go look for drivers. And it made it nice because now there was no crap on the system. I did not want to go back to the factory default of a consumer-based HP system of doing that restore where I knew I was going to have all that crap. And I basically said, you know, if I do this by getting you back up and running the proper way, you know, it's going to cost an extra couple hours of my time. Let's move to Windows 7 and you won't have to worry about it. And he agreed. So that was nice. Protect. Create a rescue disk. Absolutely. It goes without question. I like this. Get a Diet Pepsi and a slice or check on the backup from the old machine. Check firewall settings. Woot for all browsers. I don't do that. Sukuna.com. Again, I don't do that. I'm putting a Vira on or I'm putting, that's it. I don't mess with anything more complicated than that. I keep it simple. Customize. Here we go. Install and test the printer. Cross your fingers. Hope that the printer's not too old and that it will work with Windows 7 and that you're not telling the client, well, it's not supported. So you hope that the printer's new enough and that it's one of those printers. I'm always like, oh, please, please have the driver as we plug the printer in. For the Mac people out there, let me tell you, I ran into last week, it was ugly. I had to do a whole update that took over a half hour to do the OS X Lion update just to be able to get the right print driver. Install any required software so files from the old computer are usable. Simple accounting, iTunes, etc. Transfer files from old computer or backup drive if necessary and possible. Me, I'm always transferring files to an external USB drive that I bring with me. I bring 2 1-terabyte drives. Or is it someone that already has one of those drives that they're using for backups? And then I'll, of course, use the clients. Test the documents are opening properly. Addresses and favorites are present. Please test. This is so important. You can't just transfer it and say, well, just because I copied it means it works. There's no guarantee. Open files. Ask them to open up important files. What's really important? Have them open these things up. Have them test. Test, test, test. Backup, backup, backup. It's our mantra. Install, test other peripherals, webcam, wireless mouse, whatever. Set up a backup. Do a small backup and a confidence restore. Finish setting up backup, more updates. Now, I like this section, home stretch. Shut down completely and then boot up. I sometimes don't do that, and you really, really, really should. Clean temp files, CCleaner. Restart one more time. Show customers how to create recovery disks. Place shortcut to that on the desktop. Leave disks in a prominent place. Answer questions. Document passwords, etc. for the customer. Leave business cards. Book follow-up appointment. Secure quarterly maintenance business. For question mark. Oh boy, that's high up on my list when I'm done making sure if they need regular handholding, I can be there to support it. And then get paid. Yay. If it's a home, I don't leave that house without a check in my hand. If it's a business, I will invoice them. And even some businesses, some small businesses, they'll write the check right there for me. But if it's a house, I never leave without a check unless it is a client that is covered under an existing retainer contract. Okay? Then that's okay. Of course, they don't have to pay me then because it's already covered. That is the checklist. Great list. Thank you, Kate. On to Outlook. So now, you're faced with transferring Outlook from one machine to another. Your friend, the program that you must live in. You go to Control Panel on whatever operating system it is, and you go to Mail. Now, it may say on a 64-bit system, Mail 32. I happen to be running the 64-bit version of Office. So now the first thing you want to do is you hope when you click the show profiles that there's only one profile. Well, what if there's three? Then everything that I'm doing, you must repeat for each profile. You could have separate and complete distinct settings for each profile that is listed. So number one is identify profiles. Then after you identify them, which one is the, do they prompt for a profile or do they always use one? For the purposes of this demonstration and this checklist, we're going to assume the one profile and we're going to take a look. We click properties. There are two sections that you now can go to: email accounts, data files. We want to concentrate right now on data files because this is where we can see where all of the PST files are located. We want to take a look and make sure all of the PST files and where are they? Because they could be at different places for different people. Right now, I'm highlighting my files and you can highlight the default one that's checked, or you can just highlight any one and then click open file location. And this will take you right to where the PST file is located. Now, when you're doing this, you got to make sure that Outlook is closed. Go and copy all of the PSTs. So you must identify each one, open the file location, and then copy those PSTs and make sure that you have them safely copied. So now, after we have obtained all of the PST files, go back to the email section for the accounts and then go to each account one by one, click change, and then what I want you to do is with that change, I want you to take a screenshot of each of the settings for the internet email settings, because this is where you need to go on the new system to set everything up. I always take a screenshot, hit Alt Print Screen for this settings, then open up Word or whatever word processor they have, right click and paste. And whatever was active for that screen, that's what you're going to get. You got one more section that you got to check. There's a little button called More Settings. Click that. Then go to Outgoing Server and see that you have to log in. Most of the 9 times out of 10, you will. Now you go to Advanced, and this is where you take a screenshot of all of the settings for that account. What port is the POP3? What port is SMTP? Once you get the screenshots for each account, save that document. So paste them into the Word, save the document. A couple more things we need to check along the way. Go back to email accounts, and then you have other tabs. The client or the person may be using RSS feeds, SharePoint lists, internet calendars, published calendars, and address books. So you need to have all of those things set up. If there's something there, make sure that you check it or you take a look at what the settings are for the different address books. If there's any kind of internet calendars, you got to get all those settings. And if there's anything there and you can check the settings, take a screenshot so you're not stuck when you're setting it back up. With the new Outlook, you want to start, you go to the control panel, and this is where you build everything that you recorded. You begin again creating all of the profiles by adding a profile, and then you start entering all of your settings. Now, what I like to do, most people are using a single profile. And in that single profile, there's mostly one or two PST files. In the single profile scenario, you enter all the information and you let it create that outlook.pst file in the folder that's defaulted and specified. But before you open up Outlook for the first time, you copy your PSTs over and it will overwrite that Outlook file. So after you've created the new profile, now you take the Outlook PST, you let it overwrite. You add the other data files pointing to the PSTs that you've just copied. You start Outlook. I forgot something very, very important. That is to copy the NK2 files. The NK2 file is the autocomplete files that are so important to Outlook. And the location, two ways you can do this. You can download the NK2 edit from NERSOFT, and I'll have that link. But I know where these files are located. And if you can easily navigate there by just going to the profile of the user, go to the C drive. If it's Windows 7, you would go to Users, then the network name that they log in under for the profile, and then you would go to App Data, Roaming, Microsoft Outlook. This is the place where the NK2 files are located. Well, it's like, oh my God, why? Why are they located there? I mean, why would Microsoft do that? And that's why using a file like NK2 Edit, a program like that, can help you back that up and then do a restore. Since I know where they're located with XP and Vista and Windows 7, I have no problem just going right there and copying the directory. So here's a tip, and this is important. When you are restoring Outlook and you're now on the new system, do not restore the NK2 files until you've launched Outlook. Let me repeat, do not copy the NK2 files back until you've launched Outlook, because that directory has not been created until you run Outlook for the first time. after you've run Outlook and you've tested and mail can send and receive and the data files are working, you now close Outlook. You now go to that location for where the NK2 files are located, and there will be an Outlook directory. And then you can copy all of that information back. It's very simple once you have this all outlined. And I have all of this outlined in one sheet as a reminder for the steps for the process, so you can go through this when you are transferring Outlook data for anyone. Could be yourself, for whoever it is. If you got to go through this process, this is a PDF that you want to have by your side. I've done this so many times that I just take it for granted for the process. And I've had to do this every single day this week. I've been installing a new system for a client where I've had to transfer their Outlook settings. This process works. Let's get to some voicemail.
Hey, Mike, this is Clifford. I was listening to your show 384 where you're talking about the Microsoft updates being grayed out. You might try going to the Microsoft Fix It website. I had the same issue a while back, and I don't recall what the fix was, but it was some sort of registry fix that Microsoft Fix It did. So go ahead and Google search for that, and I hope that solves your problem, because yeah, rebuilding the OS is no fun. You don't have to. Alrighty, enjoy your show. Thank you.
Actually, that did not work. I'm going to play this, and then I will tell you what worked.
Hey, Mike, it's Keith Albright from formerly the Mind of Root. Hey, we're listening to show 384, and you were talking about a problem post-malware with Windows automatic updates. You might want to check in the Windows System 32 folder. Look for the Windows Automatic Update client, the WUAUCLT.exe. See if there is a rogue executable that's replaced that, and you should find the original one renamed as WUAUCLT1.exe. If you flip-flop them and, you know, delete the rogue one and put the original one back in place, you may find that it automatically get reversed on you. And if that's the case, you still have a viral helper process that's watching in the background for that to happen. But I've had a recent spate of malware problems on this PC that I worked on, and that was one of the things that it did. It replaced the actual executable. And even running the restore, I think it just looks at that the executable's there, doesn't do any kind of a checksum on it or anything, and just assumes that since it's there, it doesn't need to be replaced. So what I wound up doing eventually was, I found the helper process. It was actually masquerading as a Prevx antivirus, which the system actually had a licensed version of the original Prevx antivirus on there. But this malware actually impersonated a process for Prevx, which made it difficult to find, and that was the helper process. Once I got that removed, it was able to get the automatic update client restored to the new one, run the repair utility, and it all worked. So might want to take a look for a couple of those things and you know, see if there's that going on, and if there's a helper process that's in the background still, you know, a remnant of it causing a problem. So I hope that helps, and we'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Keith, thank you for that. I did not do that, which actually might have worked, but here's what did work. Kate sent me an email with two links. One to the Microsoft Fix It, which did not work, and then another link to the Complete Internet Repair. And I used the Complete Internet Repair and it fixed it. When I tried and used my Windows Repair that I've been talking about for the last few weeks, is such a great utility, and it has helped me repair a lot of things. Well, it did not repair the Windows update. So this Complete Internet Repair is another one of those tools that you have to have for post-cleanup. Last week, on site with a client, believe it was on Friday, I actually used it on three computers that I needed to fix Windows update, and it fixed every single one of them. I mean, Keith, I love what you suggested, and that's a lot of work, but it's so nice if you find a utility that can automatically do it and just save a lot of time and a lot of legwork. That's great. this voicemail was on the network fix, and then we have a couple emails about it. This was Jason's problem.
Hi, Mike. It's Ron Brian Wilson from Newark, Ohio. On the last show that had someone talking about having problems connecting to DHCP, what I did on XP was do a reinstall, just a repair install of XP, and then just reapply the patches. I didn't have to reinstall any of the applications or any of the data. Hope that helps. Bye.
A good idea. And actually, Jason emailed me back on what he had to do. This was an email from Mark, and he says, on this problem that Jason has, I have a suggestion for Jason, who was working on some computers which couldn't acquire an IP address after removing malware. I've run into this before and finally discovered with auto runs that the registry key to a networking driver has been removed. To figure out which driver, I looked at the anti-malware log files to see which driver, the sys file, had been healed. Then I knew which registry key had been deleted by the malware. I've attached the .reg files for the branches that had been deleted in a few of the computers I've worked on where afd.sys or netbt.sys was infected and patched. I exported the registry branch from a clean system and imported it into the registry on the cleaned up systems. I hope that makes sense. If you or Jason has questions, let me know. Feel free to forward this to him. And this is from Mark, who's a computer tech. Thank you very much. Now, this is the follow-up from Jason, and he says, I've sent him a lot of emails on the complete internet repair and a couple things for him to try. And he says, that's what I used to reset the TCP/IP stack and the Windows and the WinSock and et cetera. I just listed it out, the items, instead of saying I used that utility. He did use that utility. I also reset them manually as well. I had to wipe and reload the PCs that were in my shop due to the time constraint. However, after several hours of digging, I think I may have found a solution that I'm going to give a try the next time I get one of these. I did fix one of the XP systems, though, by copying the entire directory of Windows System 32 drivers. Notice this is what Mark suggested. From a working PC to the messed up, and it worked. But that did not fix the other XP machines. And the fix I found has to do with the registry entry that the virus changed to point to a temp file instead of one of the sys files in the drivers directory. So that may explain why copying the files to the second PC didn't work when it worked on the other. Thanks for the help, and I will keep you updated if that fix works. Jason, thank you. And Mark, who wrote in, nailed it, which is what Jason went through by trial and error and getting to that and was able to fix it. So this is horrible. Some of these infections where they are infecting the sys files and the registry keys that you have to manually go in and repair. And I think if we get it down to where we have enough of just a couple utilities and some processes, we can bring this system back to normal quickly so we don't have to go through a whole nuke and pave and redo the whole thing, which I try not to do, but ultimately sometimes you have to, just like Jason had to. You got the time constraints, you just got to redo the system. It's faster. This is from Yitzi, and he's from Israel, longtime listener. Contributes, hey Mike, I wanted to comment on your need to map a network drive during your login without AD. You can still build a login script or a bat file, as you mentioned, and then put it in the user startup folder. That way the user won't even have to think of double-clicking that script or batch file after the login. You know, I thought of that, and I was going to put it in there, and I didn't do it. And then I'm reading this email, and I was like, well, I probably should have. Right now, I did fix that by having the bat file and having it linked to a shortcut on the desktop, and that is solving her problem whenever she needs it. This is that help screen pop-up. This is from Jerry, and he says, listening to your show about Windows 7 help screen popping up randomly, I didn't hear if you already tested a different keyboard. I did. And in case the F1 key maybe getting slightly stuck. When things like that happen, I've seen that, and it seems to be a stuck key. My control key gets stuck frequently, and I have to tap it hard a few times to unstick it. Jerry, great suggestion. As a matter of fact, when that first happened, I happened to be talking to Winston Wolf, and the first thing he said is, the F1 key's stuck. And I checked that out myself, because I know you have clients and people that you see, they have pencils and pens and paper clips and things that they keep literally on the keyboard. I don't know why. I keep nothing on my keyboard. But to store something between the function keys and the numbers, I don't get it. And it's so easy to have something stick and let the keyboard, you know, have that key, you know, stick. I personally checked the key, and there is nothing that wrong with the F1 key, because I thought of that after Winston gave me that idea. That was great. Final email, mobile phones. Now, remember my story last week about my son using the smartphone to get out of the problem with getting everything shut down properly, and he's sending pictures to my plumber, Mike. Last year, my son was driving back from L.A. to his home in San Francisco. He called us from the side of the highway. The car was overheating. He was alone. I asked him to send me photos of the engine, and my hubby directed him around the various parts, having my son email close-ups until they found the problem and could apply a temporary solution. They were able to get the car started, and he made it home safely. We both have Android phones. Don't we live in wonderful times? Wendy, what a great way to wrap up. It's the Christmas season, and everybody's still, you're hustling and bustling, and you're buying your presents, and you're getting caught up. If you're using Amazon or anybody that you know, friend, family, neighbor, use my link, amazon.micnation.net. Or if you forget, just go to my website, click on the big Amazon link on the left-hand side. Go to Amazon and make all your purchases, and I'll get a small commission, which really, really helps, especially during the holiday season. That's where I really see a great return on that, and the contributions, you know, coming in from that really, really helped me out. So thank you so much for your support. I thank you. No music tonight in the show. Thank you so much for being part of the Mike Tech Show family and subscribing to the show, downloading it, and being a part of the show. I really appreciate it. And I'll be back same time, same channel next week. That's it. Bye-bye, everybody.
You've been listening to The Mike Tech Show, a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Please visit techpodcast.com.